complain, and it has taught me how to stand and fight what I believe in. I guess that's just how I was raised. I find it hard to walk away.
The crime race through the roof. Gun control is on the rise. We make our ends meet. Take what we need to survive. A shot, one kill is such a thrill. That's the way that I was raised. When I pick up a gun, I hit right where I aim. It's time to take the stand. It's time to draw the line. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. Granddaddy taught my daddy how to hunt and how to fish, how to be a man. Don't take any shit. Raised up on the good book, learned about the land. They grew what they ate. They didn't get it from Uncle Sam. It's time to take the stand. It's time to draw the line. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. So go and round up all them Yankee boys. Get ready for a fight. I'll round up all my rebel friends. Meet you at the Mason-Dixon line. Cause the South is gonna rise again, and we're gonna kick your ass this time. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. It's not really about North or South. It's about red, white, and blue. I'll fight beside any Yankee man if he feels like I do. We'll stand here today and we'll proudly say to the man in the suit and tie, you better bring yours when you come to take mine. Going round up all them Yankee boys. Get ready for a fight. You might have won that war back in 1865. But the South is gonna rise again, and we're gonna kick your ass this time. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. You can bring yours, but Mr. President, you ain't taking mine.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT right now.
Well, here we are, sitting there, so 4th of December, Christmas in, what, 2.5 weeks, something like that? Unbelievable. And then it'll be 2018. Good news out of Nevada today, or last couple of days. It seems that they are, well, I better not say anything, because I've heard conflicting stories about this, that they're releasing Dave and Mel Bundy, but Cliven's still refusing to leave because he's not leaving until everybody leaves. When they release everyone, he'll walk out. We'll see how that goes. But there's not a lot of better men. Lavoie would have done that without any question in my mind. But not a lot of men would, after 2 years of being wrongfully imprisoned and tortured and strip searched and everything else, then thank you, Susie B. Appreciate that. Would voluntarily say, well, you know, if them guys can't leave, I'm not leaving either. That's quite a man right there. Guarantee it. Had a couple of good classes this weekend. Had a concealed carry class on Friday and a reloading class on Saturday. We had somebody come over here, a listener come all the way over here from southern New Mexico for the reloading class. And thank you, Bill, for this also. That was really, really good. Wow. Excellent. So let's see here. We had, guess that's all the class. Now, well, we still got the one we're planning on doing in January up in Bullhead City, Arizona. We have a place figured out for that. We just waiting to do what? No. And the next one will be, we do have confirmation on a place to shoot for a 3-day defensive handgun class, 3-day personal defense handgun class near Vancouver, Washington. And we haven't got a date set for that yet. It'll probably be, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks or a month before we nail that down. But we do have a place to shoot, so that'll be in probably somewhere between April and June. Not sure yet. I'll talk to Amy and get some things ironed out here. So look at the weather and everything and see how it looks to go up there and do a class. So let me look in here and see who all's in the chat room. Desert Rats with us again, and Dead Tinker, and Doc, and Granny, and Minnie, Northwest Heavy, Peanut Rider, Rolex, Yakima Glock. Got one anonymous in there. There'll be some more coming in soon, I'm sure. The Granny Red, yeah, it probably does. But anyway, matter of fact, biggest part of, you know, almost half of that state does. But anyhow, that's all right, because we got some friends up there and some family up there, so we'll be glad to go up there and spend a few days. So. All right, I think that's all the class updates we need to do. It looks like the FBI, the feds, are going after, well, not the FBI, it'd be the ATF, but are going after something like 4,000 people, 4,000 guns they're going to get. They, you know, the Air Force didn't turn in the information that they were supposed to on that guy that shot up that church in Texas here a while back. And so they found several failed reports and, you know, people getting guns that wasn't supposed to because of the NICS system. Imagine that. So this is the largest bunch that they've gone after for, what is say, for the last 10 years. Largest number of such retrieval requests in 10 years. So they're going after all these people that are, as far as they're concerned, as far as the Knicks background check goes, not shouldn't be having guns. Actually, it is the FBI going after them. The FBI National. Yeah, because the FBI's check let it get through. So it says ATF agents are asked to take back the guns if the FBI later finds these sales should have been denied. So it's a combined effort there, it looks like. These are people who shouldn't have weapons in the first place, and it just takes one to do something that could have tragic consequences. You know, that could stand. It says you don't want ATF to stand for after the fact. Yeah, we'll see how that works out for them. That's a lot of guns to go after. That the sudden spike in gun retrieval directives is attributed in part to the record 27.5 million background checks fielded by the NICS examiners last year. That's a lot of guns. Dang sure is. All right, let's move on up the line here and see what else we got. We can save that. I didn't understand. Let me check and see here. It looks like the District of Columbia says that they won't appeal a court ruling against stricter city gun laws. So I'm a little up in the, little lost about that. It says they won't appeal this ruling that struck down parts of the city's restrictive gun laws, a move that paves the way for more owners to obtain concealed carry permits. So that the police chief there, a blonde female, she is rabidly opposed to civilians having guns. So I'm sure this has really made her happy. It says in June, the federal appeals court ruled against a D.C. law that requires people to have good reason to fear injury. You know, living in D.C. is good reason to fear injury. Have good reason to fear injury in order to carry a handgun, says it infringes on residents' Second Amendment rights. Because of the stringent requirement, only about 120 people currently have a permit to carry a concealed handgun in the city. City's Attorney General said the decision not to appeal the ruling was a strategic one. He worries if the city were to appeal the Supreme Court and lose, it would affect similar gun regulations elsewhere, including Maryland, New Jersey. And yeah, I'm sure he's worried about Maryland, New Jersey, and New York. I continue to believe the district's good reason requirement is a common sense and constitutional gun regulation. However, I'm sure having a hard time talking tonight. However, we must reckon with the fact that an adverse decision by the Supreme Court could have wide-ranging negative effects not just on district residents, but on the country as a whole. So, we got all that bunch of compassion all of a sudden there. I have no idea. The Rolex, you're right. You're absolutely right. There, D.C. shouldn't be a place where people live anyway. That's right. What do we got? Yakima Glock, what do you got? Wow. Looks like pretty good bunch of groceries there. I don't know who that is, but pretty good sized fish anyway. All right, let me cruise on down. We got a lot of them we got to do here. You know, there's been a certain faction of people around in control, or at least in their minds, and controlling the country, that have worked on some things for a very long time, and there's been a lot of people involved in this. Every president, even up to and including Reagan and the Bushes and everybody else, has been involved to some degree in all of these things here. And their house has fallen down. Their house of cards is going to come tumbling down here. And, for instance, this travel enforcement there that says the Supreme Court permits full enforcement of Trump travel ban. Do you know how many, you know what the people in these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are doing right now? When they're reading these headlines? These people that have worked so hard to destroy so much and have been so successful are now being, this stuff is going against them here. And this travel ban, I think, what is there, six countries that Trump is not allowing travel from? Hey, Amy. Yakima Glock's aunt lives in Auburn. And there's, yeah. He's got a picture of her and a whale here. Well, it's not quite a whale, but it's pretty good sized fish anyway. Yakima Glock, Amy's most impressed. She's glad your aunt's in there. All right, what else we got? There's several things here that are being, I can find them because I put them somewhere else. That's why I can't find them. Okay, there they are. All right, we had the travel ban enforcement, and now we have, let's see, D.C.'s gun law. Okay, the other one was the national park deal. Some of you, I mean, wow, I'm having a hard time tonight. You've heard of the Escalante Staircase National Park or National Monument or whatever it was up in Utah. That is east of Kanab, Utah. And then there was the Bear's Ears, the much smaller one over on the more on the west side there. And Trump, this one I know is killing people. Trump has decided to give 90% of the Escalante one, I think it's the bigger one, back to control of the state of Utah. 90% of it and 50% of the other one. To my knowledge, that is the first time that has happened in history. I don't know how many or if any national parks, national monuments, national forests, national and anything has been given back to the state. And Trump said that, let me find his quote here. It was pretty dang good. He said, trying to keep the dead air from taking over here. Visiting Utah, let's see, I applaud the president. No, that's not what I'm looking for. Well, dadgummit, maybe I'm in the wrong article. Well, anyhow, Jason Chaffetz, he was the one that was trying to disarm all of, you know, disband all of the federal law enforcement. Granny, that's a very, very good thing. See, this goes back to Teddy Roosevelt. In Teddy Roosevelt's mind, I'm sure that he was doing a wonderful thing. And if Teddy Roosevelt, if every president would have had the same mindset and ideas and everything as Roosevelt, probably we wouldn't be in the position we're in right now. I don't think Teddy Roosevelt really had, I mean, I'm angry that he did what he did by doing all the national park system and everything because the land does not belong to them. But I'm opposed to that. But in the manner that he had it in mind, there was to preserve some of these pristine wilderness areas and stuff. And I think that's a good thing, at least in his mind. But if you look at the map, look at we've talked about this before. Look at the map of Nevada. 85% of that state belongs to the federal government, mostly BLM. If you look up around where Lavoie's Ranch is, up in the what they call the Arizona Strip, and in southern Utah, go ahead, pull a map up. On just look at national parks and national monuments in southern in Utah, and look how big that Escalante staircase or whatever it is. It's just in right up against the Arizona line, east of Kanab, Utah. Pull that up and look at it. They're huge, and they're surrounded by other national parks and national monuments. Where Lavoie's Ranch was, Lavoie's Ranch is one of just a couple of little spots there that keep them from creating yet another one, which is going to make damn near the entire Arizona Strip national park or national monument. And it's that is... And Granny is, I know Granny Red is she is as hardcore a patriot as any of us. But we all fall for this deal, you know, she says, is that good or is it bad? In the way we've all been taught over the last, or conditioned over the last 100 years, that the federal government were worried about the states doing things with that land that they shouldn't. Well, it's their land. They should decide. You know, I think this whole national park thing, among other things, is a gross violation of the 10th Amendment. And if they want to build subways on it and stuff, well, it's their land. Do with it whatever they want. However, that being state land also means that the people should have some say-so in what happens to it. Even the state can't just up and say, okay, well, we're going to take this, we're going to take Yellowstone National, what used to be Yellowstone National Park, and turn it into a subdivision. They don't have that much free rein to do that. The people would not stand for it. But when the feds are doing it, there's no choice. We have no options. There's no voting. They have little short, many times not very well advertised periods of public opinion, public comment on a website somewhere. And it doesn't matter what the popular vote is or how people complain about it or whatever, they're going to do whatever they damn well please. They've proven that time and again. So one thing we just have to keep in mind, as much as we have that that idea that the national parks and national monuments are protected in some manner by the national by the federal government. Yeah, probably in some manner they are. But do you realize that some of these are vast, vast expanses of land? Hundreds of thousands of acres, millions of acres. And they can't, no, Granny, Obama did not sell Grand Canyon to China. As far as I know. Not unless it's been very recent. I haven't heard about that. What was I going to say? Oh, many of these national parks and national monuments are so huge, and they do nothing with them. Nothing. And there's nothing on there to protect. Okay, so we find, we find the Grand Canyon. Obviously, we want to make some attempt to protect that. The state should take care of that. And we find little caves and little cabin somewhere that belonged to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid or whatever the case may be. Obviously, we want to protect those. We don't need to set aside 80 million acres to protect a 10-acre deal right here with a cave on it. I can see maybe, you want to take 100 acres or whatever it takes, get a nice barrier around it, maybe that's not the end of the world, but that's not what they do. If they would have done that, the people still wouldn't be up in arms about it. But that's not what they did. Bring up that map and look at Escalante Staircase in Southern Utah. Look how big it is. And there's nothing on it. Well, there is. There's some caves and stuff that's pretty neat there. But it's monstrous. It is a monstrosity. And, yeah, Doc's got a good point. There's too many military reservations, and a lot of them are too big. Look at, bring it up on your map and look at Fort Irwin, California. Look at China Lake Naval Weapons Center. Look at the, there's another one in Nevada. I can't think of what it is. It's not Nellis Air Force, but, well, that's probably that one, too. But there's just, and by doing that, they cut that off to where we can't hunt or go take your four-wheeler or go fishing or do anything. Now, some of them you can walk in and do certain things, but they extremely restrict travel on these things. As a matter of fact, that's how old, can't remember his name. He was a county commissioner out of Blanding, Utah. I don't know why I can't remember his name. I've been to his house. I went there with Lavoie, and we went and pleaded with him to stand. And, well, that's a whole other story. But at any rate, he didn't, and he went to jail for a little while. But they went out with four-wheelers and went on this newly cordoned off area there that was supposed to be restricted to four-wheelers. And this is a place where people have gone riding for years. And there's some Indian ruins back in there. I get that. You know, let's protect the Indian ruins by all means. But it doesn't mean that you have to block off a million acres to do it. You know, if there's small areas out there where you know there's Indian ruins, well, you know, we can work something out. But we don't have to take, like I said, bring that map up and look at the size of those. Look at, here in Arizona, look at the Painted Desert and the Petrified Forest and all that. Huge areas of land. So, yeah, is it a good thing? I think it's a very good thing that he's done this. He's only done it on two of them, but maybe, you know, we're kind of setting a precedent here. Maybe there'll be more. But my point of my story is there's three stories right there that are in direct conflict or diametrically opposed to what people have been, what certain people have been trying to do to this country for a very, very long time. And Trump and his appointed judge and judges and cabinet and whatever are tearing it all down. And that's great. Glad to see it. It just means that more people want to kill him. And when he does, the Civil War is going to start. And, you know, it just going to deteriorate from there. But just to be sure, I am extremely happy with what my president is doing. And I'm just, you know, the more stuff that he does like this, the more that I fear for his safety and his family. But anyway, all right. Well, I've blabbered about that long enough. It's already break time, so let me see if I can drag something up here that's suitable for a break. And let's just do this for now.
I'll be back.
Saturday morning, serials, chapters 1 through 15. Fly paper, penny loafers, Lucky Strike cream. Flat tops, soft tops, Duty Baker, Pepsi, please. Oh, do you remember these? Cigar bands on your hand, your daddy's socks roll down. Sticks, no plugs, and aviator caps with flaps that button down. Move.
movie stars on Dixie Cup tops and knickers to your knees. Ah, do you remember these? The Hit Parade, Grape Truade, the Sadie Hawkins Dance, Pedal Pushers, Ducktail Heron, Begging Your Pants, Howdy Doody, Tutti Frutti, the seam up the back of her hose. Ah, do you remember those? James Dean, he was keen, Sunday movies were taboo. The senior prom, Judy's mom, rock and roll was new. Cracker Jack Price, stars in your eyes, as daddy for the keys.
That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Beyer Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Beyer Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Beyer Barrels specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10-22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at BeyerBarrels.com. That's BeyerBarrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good. Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There the stars spangled down away. Somewhere in a distant land so many miles away.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
Do you want to lose your mind? Walk right, sit right down. Baby, let your hair hang down.
Let me tell you, cowgirl, you ain't seen nothing till you've seen the. We'll
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Okay, here we go, folks. I just got an update here 16 minutes ago. I don't know what all is in it yet, so we're going to go through this together, find out what's going on here. This is, let me double check here and check the chat room and see what's going on in there and see who's in there. Okay, all right, got a couple more anonymous in there. Okay, let's see, I don't need all of that, but let's start down here. It said Monday morning. This has to do with the Bundys and their supporters and all that, so. Let's see, sometimes the court orders the observers in the court gallery to leave when the hearings become sealed. Monday morning started with the prosecution requesting to play a recording of a phone call between Ryan Bundy and BLM agent Johnson. Also evidence the prosecution had failed to share. Remember we talked there at the beginning of the last week about all the lies and the information that was withheld and all that by the prosecution. And, well, we won't go into that anymore, but the prosecution's witness, Agent Shilakis, I'm not sure how to say that, took the stand and tell how he and Agent Johnson met Clancy Cox, Clive and Bundy's son-in-law, on the ranch grazing land on March 17, 2014. At the agent's request, Cox called Clive and Bundy to inform him of their presence and of their reason for being at the ranch. The agents were there to inform Cliven that they had a court order to impound Cliven's cattle. They were also assessing how the family would react. A few hours after the agent requested him call Cliven, Ryan Bundy returned the call to Agent Johnson's phone. This phone call was recorded. Judge Navarro initially allowed 10 minutes of that audio recording and rejected an attempt by Cliven Bundy's attorney to include the whole 46-minute conversation. The jury heard about 10 minutes of Ryan Bundy's call. So there's more to that story, you know, I mean, to the about the recordings and everything. But let's move on down here. On Wednesday the 29th, the court began more hearings about whether federal prosecutors had turned over complete evidence records about the conduct of the FBI and other government agents during the Bunkerville protest. Court observers were then removed and the hearing was sealed. Only the judge, prosecution, defense, and court staff were allowed in the court when Judge Navarro reversed her prior rulings on the defendant's detention hearings. Defense attorney Whipple said that he could not disclose what happened at the hearing, citing a gag order. Judge Navarro stated there's a lot of allegations that remain, a lot of information that's provided. So, let's see, on down here, Judge Navarro has reversed the ruling that kept the defendants in custody. She released Cliven Bundy, Ammon Bundy, and Ryan Payne to house arrest status with an ankle bracelet and monitoring device. Cliven Bundy, who was incarcerated and considered a danger to society and a flight risk, so for the last 2 years, a danger to society and a flight risk, now they're just going to turn him loose. Anyway. He refused. We've already talked about that. He also insisted he will walk out as a free man, not to a halfway house. Judge Navarro had changed release restrictions on Ryan Bundy on Monday, the 27th. And let's see, he was wearing a GPS monitor on Thursday, November 30th. Ammon Bundy was released. Defendant Ryan Payne has received clearance for release from Agent Brown in Oregon. He was released. Tier 2 defendants, here's what I'm looking for, have a detention hearing on December 4th. That would be today. Prosecutor Stephen Meyer has agreed to their release if they agree to obey the pretrial release agreement. Tier 2 mid-level defendants were scheduled as the... Now, these were the mid-level defendants. These were the supporters. These were never considered a flight risk or a danger to anybody to begin with. So why weren't they included in the initial release order? Anyway, they're scheduled as the third and final Bundy trial group to be tried. The second-tier defendants are Clive and Bundy's son, Dave and Mel, and Bundy Ranch supporters Joseph O'Shaughnessy, Brian Cavalier, also known as Buddha, and Jason Woods. Now, O'Shaughnessy and Brian Cavalier are both from Arizona. I'm not sure about Jason Woods. Michael McGuire, Micah McGuire, was part of this group but pled guilty to two felonies, conspiracy and impeding an officer on November 14th. He was released prior to sentencing, scheduled for February 16th, 2018. He'd been incarcerated for 20 months. Ammon's attorney, let's see, two attorneys relying 100% on donated funds. They have an informational website at AmmonBundyDefense.com if you guys want to go and help with that. That includes videos and written information on the case, plus a place to donate. Since the beginning of the trial, the court has had a week off scheduled for December 3rd through the 10th. Next court date is December 11th. All right, well, that's enough of this for right now. But it's very odd to me that Navarro has been so adamant about not letting some of these people out, particularly the Bundys and Ryan Payne. Then now she said, well, it's okay. Just, yeah, just stick around. Go to halfway house and have a nice Christmas. I would surely like to know what has happened here to cause her to change her mind like that. That's a big deal if you ask me. I know you didn't ask me, but I still think it's a big deal. Okay. The National Concealed Carry Reciprocity Law is moving along here. This is another thing that I do not support. I think we talked about this last week, but it, as far as I'm concerned, it interferes with states' rights. And the biggest thing is not even the states' rights thing. The biggest thing is the concern that if they do this, and all this reciprocity then falls under federal guidelines, then federal, you know, what the feds giveth, the feds can taketh away. And my concern would be that they get all this in place and everything and then just pull the cord on it and drop it all. So I'm not, I don't think that's the Fed's place to impose this national reciprocity thing. Of course, it sounds great to us on the outside, but in the long run, I think it's not a good deal. But we'll see. The Yakima Glock, you know, I'd like to believe what you're saying. I'd like to see the good in Judge Navarro and say that maybe God did soften her heart. But I think you're smoking crack is what I think. Not thinking that that's the deal. I think that somebody has either threatened her or somebody higher up has said, this is what has to happen. Make it happen today. Not sure what it is, but I would like to know. And Rolex, I think evidence to the contrary, I think that's pretty much what we were talking about the first of this article, is that there was so much conflicting evidence and so much stuff that was withheld by the prosecution and so many things that was not true and all that, yeah, I think that's all contrary to what is happening here, and I think that the whole house of cards again is just falling down. I saw that Yakima Glock. I didn't read it. I don't know. I saw that they're merging that bill, but I don't have any idea what the other bill is about at all. And of course, Doc is absolutely right. The Fed's place is not in any firearm laws, period. But that's, you know, we can sit and discuss that all night long. It's not going to make any difference. They are firmly entrenched in it, and that's not going to change anytime soon. So there's no use even wasting the breath discussing it. It's not going, nothing's going to change with that. Not till after a particular reset event was to take place. Okay, let's see here. The news came in Missouri. Attorney General Josh Hawley led 22 other states in urging lawmakers to pass the legislation. All right, that's the one caveat that guns rights advocates warn of is the likelihood the bill would be amended to include language of the new Fix NICS. Yeah, it's not NCIC, Yakima Glock, it's NICS. The new Fix NICS Act, which would add several accountability measures designed to ensure that federal agencies submit the records of criminals, domestic abusers, and others prohibited from possessing guns to the FBI-maintained system, while giving states incentives to up their own reporting. So, yeah, there's been, you know, these background checks, this is never, ever, ever, ever going to be, ever, ever going to be perfect. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be problems created, and in fixing problems, they're going to create other ones. And it's just, they'd ought to just give the whole damn thing up and be done with it. But I don't see that happening. All right, how much time we got? Oh, we still got a little time. So let's move on down here. Here's another deal. Now this is kind of related to the story where they're going after the 4,000 guns. Honolulu is reviewing a gun surrender policy. Honolulu Police Department is reevaluating its controversial policy requiring legal marijuana users with registered firearms to turn in their guns. Now this has been quite a deal all over. All over the country here is this thing with the medical marijuana. Even though states are calling it legal, some states, all states should, but few states are, the feds still haven't bought into it. The feds still say that if you use that, you're a prohibited possessor. And Hawaii was going after these people that have their marijuana cards and stuff, finding out some of them that have guns and going after the guns, which that shouldn't be the state's job. That would be the feds are worried about it. Let them deal with it. They said the letters warned that medical marijuana use disqualifies one from ownership of firearms and ammunition, advising the gun owner has 30 days to surrender their guns, permits, and any ammunition to the agency or otherwise transfer ownership. Anyway, they said, as reported to the Hawaii Tribune Herald, the state's largest law enforcement agency, that of the Big Island of Hawaii, will continue to deny future gun permit applications submitted by medical marijuana patients. We do not want to go out and look for medical marijuana patients, pointing out the difference between his department and Honolulu. When we go out and ask anybody for information on medical marijuana patients or send letters arbitrarily, it's only in conjunction with when they apply for a permit to acquire. So, Peanut Rider, that's right. Marijuana makes you nonviolent. Yeah, definitely not for me. I like that. All right, let's see if we can get a couple more in here before this. Oh, by the way, for you country music fans, I know we have several. There's a new guy out there that claims to be a country music singer. I've listened to his song, and I disagree with that. But his name is Will Hogue, H-O-G-U-E. Remember that name. Write it down. Put it in your phone. Put it on your calendar.
and want it etched indelibly in your mind. He has a new song, and I'm not going to play it for you. I am not going to give him any attention, any publicity whatsoever, however small it may be. He's got a new song called Thoughts and Prayers, and he is really beating up the NRA and gun owners and stuff in this. He's one of extremely few country stars, and this guy's not a star, I've never even heard of him, but he's one of few country performers that have been very vocal about, you know, being their anti-gun attitudes. There's several of them, but they kind of just, you know, they just sing their songs and go along and don't really make a big deal out of it because they realize that most of their fan base are pro-gun people. However, this guy says he don't care. Part of the lyrics, he says, another politician sitting far away, doesn't matter how many people got gunned down today. As long as you can keep your reelection bills paid, you're just a whore to the pimp that's called the NRA. So, you can color me not a fan right off the bat. He said, I've become increasingly annoyed by the statement of thoughts and prayers for some time. From my own experience, I know that phrase can be a kind and thoughtful way to express sympathy when there's no other way to help. But that... N.M. Glock said, I never heard of her. Yeah. No other way to help, but after these shootings, using that stock response from these, and I, that's one of those things that, to some small degree, I agree with him. You know, thoughts and prayers your way. And I've often wondered how many people on, even on the chat room and on Facebook, oh, prayers going up your way. How many of those people actually get down on their knees and pray for whatever's going on that Facebook post? I'm betting you not very cotton-picking many of them. But it's just a blanket statement, you know, oh, thoughts and prayers, you know, good thoughts, you know, good positive vibes, thoughts your way. Yeah, well, whatever. I'm sure a few of them do, but I bet you there's a whole lot more that don't. So in that regard, I kind of agree with what he's saying. He says, after these shootings, using that stock response from these cowards on Capitol Hill is incredibly insulting. They have all the opportunities in the world to make a difference, but they do nothing. And then to just send out a phrase like thoughts and prayers, as if we don't all know that there is something they could do, it's shameful. And he went on to talk about how other country artists have partnered with the NRA, and they have, there have been quite a few, under the organization's NRA Country Band. He said that the NRA even spoke to him about featuring one of his songs, but he declined the offer, turning down what is, to many, a great promotional opportunity. He said, I'm very anti-NRA, and I had thought I had made that abundantly clear, personally and career-wise, that I had been approached by NRA Country about featuring one of my songs, Strong, was the name of the song, and I wasn't willing to do that. That's not an organization I want anything to do with. I wonder if he knows that an NRA-certified instructor is what stopped the guy that got the gun that the we can probably blame the Air Force, NICS, and the federal government more than anything else for this guy that went nuts in Texas and shot all those people. But he doesn't seem to take into account there that it was an NRA instructor that kept a whole bunch of other people from being killed. So, anyway. All right, let's catch another one here or two. Got so many to do. Oh, I'm going to do this one, then we're going to back up and do another one that's related to this. I've been saving this one for a while. This is a woman that was shot dead by a hunter that mistook her for a deer. Now, I don't know if it's because of her rack or what, but that seems a little odd. New York, fatally shot this week by a hunter who believed she was a deer.
She was walking her dogs in the field, in a field in the town of Sherman on Wednesday. This was a little while ago. When she was suddenly shot. The deputies arrived at the scene. 34-year-old told him that he was the one who had pulled the trigger. He said he thought she was a deer, and he'd fired his pistol from about 200 yards away. How about that? When he heard a scream, he ran in the direction of the sound and discovered the lady. He called 911, tried to save her by applying pressure to the bullet wound until first responders arrived, and she was later pronounced dead at the hospital. So, they said no charges in the beginning here, and they said they will determine whether to bring a criminal case against the guy. Stand by. Well, there we go. Got it fixed. So, there's an update to that. Just came out. Here we go. New York hunter who mistakenly killed a woman who was out feeding, walking her dogs, probably feeling guilt-ridden as anyone has ever has right now. He thought he was shooting a deer and instead killed an innocent woman. You know, I don't get that. I don't see how you, Rolex, be real careful there. 200 yards with a pistol is not that big a deal. Not that big a deal at all. Hunter shot and killed a woman he mistook for a deer. Okay, that's the original story. Anyway, he'll likely get his day in court, but he may also be hoping to plead down to a lesser crime. After all, no one wants to spend time in prison on what they believe is an accident. Yeah, it was an accident, but geez, you know, somewhere there you've got to, there has to be some accountability for the negligence in that accident. How do you think a woman is a deer at 200 yards away? That's just, it's insane to me that someone would do that. What it is, he saw something moving. Now, it would have been one thing if she'd have been dressed up in a little deer costume with a, you know, a set of horns on her head, antlers on her head or something. It might be a little more understandable, but how do you take a woman walking a dog and then mistake them for a deer? That's just absolutely ridiculous to me. Says, however, if the facts reported by the media are accurate, this isn't an accident, this is negligence. After all, he reportedly shot after legal shooting hours, so there's the deal right there. He saw something moving and the light was too dim to determine what it was. He should have had some optics, you know, on a cord around his neck or a miniature compact binoculars in his pocket and find out what it was before he shot with what was most likely an open-sided pistol. So, let's see, it means it's most likely too dark to correctly identify his target, and that's why they have shooting laws for shooting light. You know, you can agree with them or not, it doesn't matter, that's why they have them. That and the fact that doing it's that time of day, they're coming into the water holes and everything. Said he broke damn near every rule out there for pulling the trigger as either a hunter or a shooter. He failed all of them based on what we can see. Now they'll have to deal with the ramifications of that failure, and that means legal fees. But on the other side of the coin, there's a man who did absolutely nothing, who is now dealing with the loss of his wife because of this failure. So it's very difficult for me to have any sympathy for this guy at all. Anybody that is that negligent and that careless, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he gets whatever they decide to give to him. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as the death penalty for it, but, you know, it's still as negligent as it was. It still was an accident, but he should not just walk away from it either by any remote stretch. Yeah, to Tinker, that's probably exactly what it was. It was dim light and he was shooting through some brush. It was in New York, so there's, you know, from what I understand, there's some pretty dense brush and stuff up there. It's more shotgun country than anything else. But so anyway, well, there you have it. That's we're going to call it quits. We're just right up against the clock here right now. So we'll be back Wednesday. We have several other gun things to cover right here, and we've got a if I have time to put it together, we had Yakima Glock, no, not Yakima Glock, the other Glock guy, N.M. Glock, gave me an awesome idea for Liberty Lounge. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. I want to get it put together. But I'm pretty sure you'll approve. It's a great idea. So stand by this Friday, or join us this Friday, for Liberty Lounge. And a this won't be a long-term type, because we'll run out of material after one show here. But I think it'll be a great idea, a great show. So I'm going to quit babbling, and I'm going to move on out of here. And we will see you guys on Wednesday. Thanks for joining me. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No reconciliation.